All right, so we're going to get started back, and I went a little slow and got a little behind during the first session, so I'm going to speed up here to catch up. But I wanted to share something Brian just mentioned, and this is true. He talked about in the time that we have with our children, the first 10 years are more crucial than the other ones, not because there aren't important things that happen here, but if we haven't done the work in the first 10 years, we haven't laid the foundation for what they're going to have to go through here. And of the first 10 years, the first 5 years are more critical than the next five, because again, the foundation. Now, I remember one time when I was doing this series, there was a couple that was baptized that same weekend, and they had an 11-year-old that they had never really disciplined. And so you're starting out behind the eight ball. You start out where you start out. But it's going to be much, much easier if you've done the work at the beginning. And the work on a 4 and 5-year-old is going to be much, much easier if you did the work on the 1 and the 2-year-old. And another thing he pointed out, a lot of the spankings that are going to need to come, and with a little one, it doesn't need to be much more than that usually. Later, it needs to be more. But as Brian pointed out, you don't remember a lot of the spankings that you got when you were little. In fact, those early ones, you don't remember at all, the ones you got when you were little. You remember the lesson. You learned a lesson from the time, but that didn't traumatize you if you were disciplined correctly. And we're going to see that biblical discipline is motivated out of love, Proverbs 13:24. He who loves his child disciplines him diligently. And we'll be talking about that's not out of anger, that's out of love. You're doing it for the benefit of the child. We'll go over that later. But let's get to where we left off, and that was avoiding upside down homes. Let's go back to our scenario of young couple looking for a house, and the realtor says, oh, this just came on the market. Okay, yeah, let's take a look inside. But if across the street is this, you don't want to look at that. You don't care if it has granite countertops and hardwood floors and everything's redone, because you just absolutely won't consider that because it's upside down. But I would like to suggest that there's a lot of houses in America that are upside down. Because you know who's in charge in the house? Yeah, yeah, and that's an upside down house. This, I don't remember how much of this is a quote from him or how much I just borrowed, but a fellow named Michael Pearl wrote a book that this is partly based on. So I don't know if it should have quotes or something, but at least the idea largely came from him. But he said, too many children view the home, the parents, the food, etc., as merely a means to an end to satisfy and please the child. The child makes his demands and manipulates his parents via tantrums and repeated misbehavior. Parents bow to the will of the child in efforts to placate and appease his whims and dissatisfactions, or suffer through increased strife and conflict when they cannot. The home is like a house built upside down. Don't do that. The child needs to understand it's not that they're in charge and then there's the parents and then there's God. No, it works like this. There needs to be a respect for that. So what children do need, they need our love. They need time. They need instruction and discipline. And they need godly homes. And before we start getting to the specifics of some specific mistakes, I want to talk about this godly home idea for a minute. Homes, like houses, need work and maintenance. Tuesday night, I got home, got in the shower, and there was no hot water. And went down, looked at my hot water heater, and it was kind of a mess. Our houses need maintenance, and so do our homes. So dads, here's a dad question. I want you to think here about the relative importance of temporary threats and eternal threats. Question for dads. You go home today, and you find this on the side of your house. How seriously are you going to take that? Yeah. When do you think you might get around to doing something about that? Yeah. For a number of reasons, you know, you're going to get that taken care of soon. All right. How about you go down in a basement, if you and you look at some of the floor joists and you see you got termites. Dad, is this going to make it on your priority list? Or it's like, oh, that's kind of a bummer. I was hoping to have a house not with termites. Oh, well. Anybody here going to say, well, maybe it's just a phase? No. Why are you going to do something about that now? Yeah, it's going to get worse because they're not going to stop. The corruptive forces are not going to stop. So you're going to do that now. And you need to protect your equity, right? If they eat the whole house, there's all your equity gone. And you don't have a house. So you're going to take that extremely seriously. You remember what we said at the beginning? What's more important, the house or the home? The home. I want to ask you a question. What is more destructive, a termite or internet pornography for children, or for anybody for that matter?
The internet.
Yeah. And the fact is, I work with a lot of young men during the summer. Sewell Hall used to have a camp for young men, intensive Bible studies all through the day, a couple hours break, and then singings and stuff on foreign evangelism and devotions. They'd go from about 8 to 11 at night, 8 in the morning, and it was just really intensive. There's some other brethren continuing that now. Sewell isn't directing himself, but I got to do that for a while, and it got too big, and it split up into some other ones to relieve the space issues. So Gary Fisher and Joe Works do that. Now I work with their camps, and it's, you know, hundreds of kids do these. But one of the things that we have to work on there is these are good kids. They're giving up a week of their summer, and they go in, they give up their phone for a week to have a Bible class after Bible class after Bible class after Bible class in the middle of summer, just hours and hours and hours, and they're willing to do that. And a high percentage of these kids have real problems because they're addicted to pornography. And it's like one kid told me, he said, I wish my dad had never given me that phone. Don't give a gun to a child before he's mature enough to handle it and you know he can know how to use it. We don't ask 5-year-olds to drive a car. Nobody should be watching pornography. But a child, children get, years ago, 15 or 20 years ago, the average age of introduction to porn for children was age 11. Now kids are getting exposed to it even younger. And they're not always looking for it. Sometimes it's curiosity. An innocent kid, it may just be a curiosity. Because what do you do at work or somewhere else where you hear about something and you don't know what it is? What do you do now? You Google it. Guess what kids do when they hear somebody talking about something at school and they don't know what it is? They Google it. And guess what happens when they Google it? But then a whole lot of it is other things. And there are people out there targeting. The pornography industry makes more than ABC, CBS, NBC combined. They make more than the NFL and I think the NBA combined. And it's tearing kids up. They're even now targeting girls. A lot of girls are getting messed up on it. And they target it in different ways. When you listen to people who have studied these things and look at the numbers. But especially boys, that's who I work with. It's just sad. It's just we have a mixed audience, so I'm not going to go into detail about how sad it gets, but it's atrocious. And I've known of people that end up in prison because of what they've gotten into, because of what started out on child porn, on pornography. Remember a guy ended up in a psychiatric ward. It's just really horrible. And we don't want termites in our home, but then we put TVs and computers in our children's rooms. And I used to listen to these boys when they would talk about pornography. One night some were talking about, they invited me to go down there and be with them. And boy after boy gets up and he starts telling his miserable story. And it says, well, it all started, I was at home alone, or I was in my room watching TV, and then I saw this ad. And it just over and over and over, they're alone with media. So let's go back to the termites. How seriously would you take it if termites were infested in your home? Is internet pornography going on in your home? If it is, that's a much bigger problem than the termites. And if anybody here has that problem, you got to do something about it. Bunch of these kids think, this is what we'll do until we get married. Guess what they do after they get married? They keep doing it. God created man and woman, and for this reason, a man shall leave his father and wife, his mother and father, and cleave to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. Leviticus 17, in talking about sexual relations, you will not uncover her nakedness. That's your brother's nakedness. You will not uncover her nakedness. We live in a society where there are a bunch of virtual prostitutes uncovering their nakedness for anybody that will look, and kids are getting hooked on it, and we better not be the customers for that. And if you've got an issue with that in your life, you got to get rid of it. And if you need help, talk to somebody here and talk to your elders, talk to other brethren here that may have been through that, and do something about it. And one of the things you can do about it is what Jesus said, if your hand causes you to stumble, cut it off. I was working with one young man, years and years of constant bad behavior, and he doesn't want to get rid of his phone. If it's better to go into heaven without an eye and a hand, it's better to go into heaven without a smartphone if you can't behave yourself. And not just pornography, they need a godly home. I remember one time I was at a meeting up in Maine, older couple. I was supposed to get there at a certain time. I got there, they said, come in. I walk in the door, he's sitting in his lazy boy, she's sitting in her lazy boy. And they're watching, I guess, some soap opera or something, or some movie of a bedroom scene going on. And they're just sitting there. What signals does it send to our kids when they see, oh, we go to church on Sunday and we talk this way and we don't use these words there? And we talk about these things, but then on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, we do this. How loudly does that speak to our kids? Have a secure place. Godliness does not come from taking our cues from the world. Romans chapter 12, 1 and 2. We'll read that and then get to the material that we'll be caught up in. Get to the material we're going to be covering for this time. Romans chapter 12. And whether you're talking about family structure, various things. I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service. Be not fashioned according to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. If you're taking your cues from this world in the parenting magazines, at the dentist office, and different things, and listening to that, how to raise a child, that's not the way to do it. Listen to the Word. And listen to brethren around you who have raised godly children. All right. The rod and reproof give wisdom. A child left to himself brings shame to his mother. I'm going to tell two stories here. I'm going to tell just one of these stories. I'll tell the other one later. So I used to live near a four-year-old, and this is sad to say, I didn't like him. And that's sad to say, because like four is one of my very favorite ages. Four is so fun. But I did not like this kid. Because, well, I'll give you a couple examples. His parents would be over here yelling and yelling and yelling and yelling for him to come. He's over here just ignoring. Every once in a while they yell. He ignores. And then eventually he says, I didn't hear him. And he did, the little boy with him. Yes, you did. And just, I open my car door. There's just a pile of dirt in my seat that he's put there. He opens my door without knocking, and he stands there. And his overalls are wet in the front and brown in the back. And he goes, I don't have to use the bathroom. Now, his parents went to a very good congregation. But apparently she had read a book encouraging her not to discipline or spank her child. So instead of ignoring Proverbs, she listened to that book. That was not a happy kid. And you can, I guess, imagine why I didn't like him the way I usually like four-year-olds, because he just wasn't pleasant. But here's the sad part. At 4 years old, whose fault was that? Yes. I don't know where he is now. I do not suspect he's in a good place now. But at this point, he's an adult. And he is now responsible for himself. And he should not be making excuses saying, well, my mom and my dad, because he's an adult now. And when we grow up, we need to take our responsibility for ourselves. But at age four, that was on mom and dad. And that's just sad. The rod and reproof bring wisdom, but a child left to himself brings shame to his mother. So we're going to start going now through some common parenting mistakes to avoid. And as we said in the first hour, I've made mistakes, you've made mistakes. I don't have these up here so that you'll panic and feel guilty. Oh no, I did that wrong. I've done a lot of things wrong. You've done a lot. We're not perfect people. But when we see that we're doing a mistake, we want to recognize it's a mistake and then correct that. And then do it better. For who? For our children. And in service to God. All right, so mistake number one, pretty easy, failing to discipline. Let's take a look at some Proverbs. He who spares his rod hates his son. He who loves him disciplines him diligently. Now you have people that say, oh, I love him too much to spank him. I understand you may have emotions and you may not want that. And I understand it. So, well, it would hurt me to... We need to be able to handle that. He needs what the Bible says he needs. And I don't need to be so selfish as to refuse to give it with him, because it puts me in a role I don't want to be in. My little guy needs me to be the dad and needs mom to be the mom in a loving way, not out of anger. It doesn't say, but he who is angry disciplines him diligently. It says what? He who loves him disciplines him diligently. You may have been brought up in a home where there was actual child abuse, and if so, I'm sorry. And there are people that abuse children that need to be in jail because they're actually endangering those children. That's not what we're talking about here. You know, telling a 1 or 2 year old, no, is not child abuse. We're going to talk more specifically about that later. And giving a spanking back here is not child abuse. It should be done out of love, but it needs to be done diligently. Discipline your son while there is hope. Do not desire his death. Notice that while there is hope. You see, when they're little, you have the opportunity to be training them. There's going to be a point where they get older, and just like anybody ever worked with clay, can you do a lot with the clay when it's wet? How about after it's set and dried? It's not much you can do now. Do it while there's hope. Foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. The rod of discipline will drive it far from him. Proverbs 22:15. I got it driven from me from time to time for sure. Do not hold back discipline from the child. Although you strike him with a rod, he will not die. Just because he's, you know, crying a lot doesn't mean he's hurt that bad. One boy told his sister, he said, "Hadn't you figured it out?" He said, "Cry more and the spanking ends quicker." You know, so the rod and reproof bring wisdom, but a child who gets his own way brings shame to his mother. Proverbs 29. Correct your son, he will give you comfort. He will also delight your soul. Proverbs 29:17. And I've already given the illustration of the four-year-old. So mistake number one that a lot of parents make is they just don't discipline their children. What a disservice to the child. And sometimes when you read these people's writing, oh, just let the child be whoever they want to be. A one-year-old doesn't know what a human being needs to be. That's why they've got us. Remember the robin? You know, after what was it, 5 or 6 weeks, doesn't see mom and dad anymore, doesn't need them. This little baby right there, I'm guessing more than 5 weeks there, not ready to be on his own. He needs us. This idea that the children are the ones that should let them be whatever they're going to be. No, they need that training. That's what these verses are about. Mistake number two, rewarding misbehavior. We've already mentioned this one before. And why do children throw tantrums? To get what they want. Lowering the bar, and because when we say rewarding misbehavior, you know, most people wouldn't think, do you reward misbehavior? Well, no, who would do that? It's not like, here's $5, go kick grandma. Nobody does that. But when the kid is in the store and he said, I want that. No, we're not going to buy that today. But I want it. No, we can't get that today. I want it. You're mean. No, you need to be quiet. You're mean. I hate you. You're a mean mommy. Shh, you're embarrassing me. Does he go, oh, pardon me. I didn't realize it's embarrassing your mom. Does he know he's embarrassing mom? That's the point. The louder he gets and the more people start looking and she starts panicking, then what's going to happen? Oh, I'm sorry. Shh, they're embarrassing. I'm sorry. He never does this. You know. And then finally what happens? Boom, into the cart. Lowering the bar and accommodating and facilitating behavior. Let's imagine you've got two moms are visiting, and there's some little bitty guys and then somebody older. And the little bitty guys are wanting to watch something very age appropriate for 2 or 3, and the 7-year-old wants to watch something else, and he maybe, you know, turns it off or it says it's stupid, pushes them down when they're trying to get it on or something, says, I don't want to watch this. And now somebody's crying and the two moms go in there and the mom with the little bully, you know, we'll call him Jaden. It's a popular name right now. I'm not picking on somebody whose child is named Jaden. Jaden, you shouldn't push the other children. Oh, Jaden, you shouldn't do that. Do you have another one somewhere else so Jaden can watch his program and they can watch What'd she just do? She said some words and doesn't back it up at all. You know, what's the last thing Jaden should get right now? When a child is misbehaving, the one thing they should not get is the thing they were trying to get. Just because she goes through the words, "Oh, you shouldn't have done that," doesn't mean anything if she gives him what he wanted. You know what he needs? One, he's not going to get to watch his program. Two, he needs to apologize to those other little kids and their mom. And if it was mine, I might give him the whipping right in front of them. But he definitely needs to apologize and needs to be punished for that. Letting a child get his way is not doing him a favor. It will spoil him. Letting a child get his way will not satisfy him. It will spoil him. I want to tell you a story about this first one here. So I was in Birmingham one time doing this series, and somebody told me a story about a kid and breakfast. And it was such an amazing story, I figured it wasn't true, just one of those anecdotes. But I thought it was a good story, so I started incorporating it. Now, I would always give a disclaimer, you know, this probably isn't true, but, you know, makes a point. Until I was in Tennessee, and Sarah Bain Bunting, wife of Bob Bunting, said, "That is true. Bob is the one that saw it, and she knew where it had happened, you know, and gave me some more details on the story." So it's a real story. So Bob Bunting was down preaching in Florida years and years ago, maybe late 50s, early 60s. Nice home, real nice drapes and everything. They spent a good bit of money. None of them were in place because they'd all been pulled down by the little tyrant. And it's breakfast time. I don't remember if it was a boy or a girl, but the child is in their high chair and the parent has made them their breakfast, and the child goes, "I don't want it." And the adult says, "What would you like?" "I want a worm." The adult went outside and dug up a worm and brought it to the child. The child said, "I want it cooked." The adult put the worm in the skillet and cooked the worm, brought it to the child. "I want it cut in half and you eat half of it." The adult cut the worm in half and they ate their half. Right. Now, do you think the child says, "Oh, thank you. I've got everything I want. I'm now a very satisfied child." No, now they were back to where they started. They didn't want it. Is that a happy kid? That is not, what were they doing that child any favor at all? Letting a child just get his way is not doing him a favor. It will spoil him. Letting a child will not satisfy him. It will spoil him. Importance of boundaries in playgrounds, et cetera. There was a survey done, or a study done. They watched kids in a park, city park, with no fences. And so there's, you know, buses, traffic, strangers, you know, trucks and things. And they tended to cluster in the center of the park. They put up a fence. Guess where the kids played? All over the park. Now they know where the boundaries are. Now they've got security. There's the streets and stuff and the strangers. Here's our park and here's our boundary. They didn't resent the boundaries. They thrived with the boundaries. Kids need boundaries. They also need some freedoms and some fun and things within those boundaries. But there needs to be boundaries. Have you ever had a child from a dysfunctional home in your home and they really enjoy being in your home, even though there's all these rules that aren't in their home? I heard about a young man, he was about 16 or so, is up in Indiana, and he was hanging out with some of the kids there that were Christians, and it was like Friday night, and at a certain time the other kids had to go home because they had a curfew. And this kid, he could do whatever he wanted, which seems, as a teenager, kind of nice, right? Wouldn't it be nice, you know, if it's a teenager, "Hey, no rules, I can stay out as late as I want." This is what he said when they said it was getting closer to curfew time, they had to go home. This is what he said. I wish there was somebody that cared enough about me to care where I was. He knew he didn't have any rules, but he also knew why he didn't have any rules. Because nobody even cared. And that's a sad. Number three, the difference between a boy and a pig. Somebody said if you give both of them everything they want, you will get a really tasty pig, but a really bad boy. The rod and reproof bring wisdom, but a child who gets his own way brings shame to his mother. Proverbs 29:15. Number three, the mistake of expecting misbehavior. This is different. We're not talking about wanting misbehavior, hoping for misbehavior, or preferring misbehavior, right? We would all prefer behavior. But have you ever gotten into this trap? Oh, we can't take him to the restaurant. There's no way he's going to sit still for an hour. Well, after all that sugar, he's going to be impossible. Oh, I'll never get him to eat that. Sorry, my son's not much of a sharer. What's happened here? What's the parent done? They've kind of given up. It's like, he's going to act bad. You know what that little guy needs? He needs parents that know the game isn't over yet, and they're going to keep working with him and not throw in the towel. Expecting, and we might say, but I know he's not going to act nice at the restaurant. I know he's not going to sit still for an hour. I know he's not. Change your expectations. But he's not. Let me give you an illustration. You remember the image of the old drill sergeant in the Marine Corps? You know, picture the bus pulling up over there at Paris Island, and all these new recruits are getting out of the bus. There's the Marine Sergeant. Terry, we're going to let you be the Marine Sergeant. As they're getting off the bus, do you think that all of them give military acceptable push-ups and know how to march and make their bed to qualify? No, you don't. Yeah. But by the end of 6 weeks, what are they going to be doing? Because he expects it. Expect it doesn't mean before the work is done, you think the work is done. No, but it means when it's not being done right, you're going to get it done right. Now, my point is not that you send your children to a Marine camp with a drill sergeant, but there's an idea of expectations there that are important. My little guy or my little girl doesn't need you or me to give up and say, well, she's just a liar. That's what she'll always be. Well, he's just selfish. That's what he'll always be. Children are going to misbehave. That's when we do our job of correcting and teaching and training. And by the way, let me zero in on one of those right there. After all that sugar, he's going to be impossible. Who heard you say that? Who hears all of this? And you may, in your family, have somebody that because of a diet or allergy or something else needs to stay away from a certain food. That's fine. You know, if you and your doctor know that and your child does better with one food than another food, nutrition's an important topic. You know, do what your child needs for that. But there's a whole lot of bad behavior that just gets blamed on sugar generally. Let me illustrate it like this. How many of you have been to a birthday party where at the end of the birthday party, you know, the ill-trained kids, you know, they're mad and they're screaming, they're crying, they don't want to clean up, they're just being brats. But the well-trained kids, they're disappointed it's over, but they help clean up and they say thank you, right? Guess what they all had? They all had birthday cake with way too much icing and ice cream and maybe Kool-Aid. You know, I stopped at the Shell station last night and put in gasoline, you know. And if you want to, you can put in, you know, premium, you know, but I don't get to pull out on the highway, you know, and get pulled over and said, well, after all that premium gas, sure, it produces energy, but it doesn't mean that I don't have a responsibility on how I use my energy. So foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. The rod of discipline will drive it far from him. As a general rule, you will get what you expect. If you expect tantrums, you're going to get them. If you expect dishonesty, you'll get it. If you expect bad attitudes, you will get it. But if you really expect the opposite, require and train for the opposite, you will get the opposite. It may take a little time, but keep your expectation high for the child. Number four, failing to be consistent. This is really easy to do. Because on a day when we're not pressed with a lot of other things and we're in a good mood and things are going well and we're calm and we see that our child needs instruction on something, it's pretty easy to do that, right? Is every day like that? No. Some days we don't have much time, some days we're stressed, some days, etc., and it's easy to be inconsistent. But the Bible says, he who spares his rod hates his son, he who loves him disciplines him. How? Diligently. I read an article one time by a child psychiatrist, and some of them don't know what they're talking about, but this one did. And he said, children are kind of like little gamblers, okay? Gamblers gamble not because they know they're going to win, but because there's a chance they'll win, right? Do y'all have the lottery here in Texas? Right. So what if Texas, and I asked the guy at the gas station near me a few years ago, because I'm, you know, standing in line behind these people and they're buying all this stuff. I said, how much do they usually spend? He said about $50 a week. So when you're standing behind that guy at the convenience store and he's buying those tickets, does he think he is going to win tonight? He knows there's a chance. He doesn't think, I am going to win tonight, because he didn't win last week or the week before, or the week before, or the week before. But there's a chance. And this is pointing out, this child psychiatrist was pointing out, kids operate the same way. You know, they might not always get their way, but if by behaving badly, they might get it. Go for that. There's been tests done with rats that'll show that, you know, because you can have hit that button, get the food, then you know what that is. But they'll more obsessively go after the ones where it's unpredictable, that you might or might not. It's kind of like, you know, the people at the, you know, slot machines and stuff. You know what would end lottery ticket sales in Texas? If Texas announced and everybody knew it, you know, we got a budget shortfall, we're just not going to pay out anymore. If you still want to buy the little cards and scratch tickets to see if you got the right numbers, you can, but you don't win anything ever. What would happen to lottery sales? Yeah. What changed? Before, it usually didn't work, but now they know it's not going to work. And you know when Junior's going to stop, he learned to behave? When he realizes it's not going to work. Eliminate the lottery winnings, people will quit buying tickets. Eliminate occasional payoffs, the child realizes the lottery is shut down. If you've got a historic, I don't know if you've got this or not in Houston, but if there's an old historic part of town where, you know, pedestrian historic traffic and there's no cars allowed in there, no parking, etc., and there's some no parking signs around, and people don't park there. What if there was a very lenient ticket writer there, and everybody knew that here's how it worked. The sign says, no parking, but everybody knows that if you park there, you will get after 10 minutes, you'll get a slip of paper that says, please do not park here. If you're still there 10 minutes later, you'll get one that says, we ask you not to park here. After half an hour, you get, I really mean it, do not park here. After 40 minutes, you get, don't make me tell you again. After 50 minutes, you get, I'm going to start counting to 10. And after an hour, you get a ticket. What would that area look like?
Lots of parking.
Yeah, it'd be full of cars that have all of those other color tickets, and then what would everybody do? Yeah, and they'd be parking there until and get it out within the hour. And can you see the person, I don't understand why these people. Well, yeah, I understand why all those people are parking there. Because this is just nonsense. Now, somebody parks there and they get a ticket or they get towed. They realize, oh, you don't park there. Mistake number five, thinking I don't have time. Mom told me this one time. She said, well, I don't have time to deal with all their misbehavior. You know, we're going to make it to soccer practice, but I don't have time to deal with all their misbehavior. You know, he's not going to maybe get to this soccer practice. Maybe he's not going to get to play soccer, but we need to deal with misbehavior. Would you say that about lice? If your child came home with lice, would you say, well, that's unfortunate, but I don't have time to get rid of lice. It's like the termite problem. We know it's only going to get worse. Child training time is well-invested time, and it saves time. Hebrews 12:11 says, all discipline for the moment seems not joyful but sorrowful, yet afterwards it yields the peaceful fruit. This is why, coming back to what Brian said, the first 10 years are more important in the training than later, in the first five than that, because that time that you spend here fundamentally, where the child learns to respect authority, learns that behavior is more important than desire, learns you don't always get everything you want, and you learn to have some self-control and self-denial. When they learn that at 1 and 2, you've got the foundation that's going to make these other things easier. But if you don't teach that back here, then what's going to be happening during adolescent years? You're going to have a lot more battles. What's going to be happening during the early teens and later teens and that type of thing? He who spares the rod hates his son. He who loves him disciplines him diligently. Mistake number six, failing to control self. The proper motivation is love. We're not talking about abusing children. As we said, there's people in prison for child abuse, and there's more people that should be in prison for child abuse. There are a lot of horrible people in this country. Sometimes it's boyfriends, you know, that get angry over a crying baby and do horrible things. We're not talking about child abuse. We're talking about discipline. But I heard one time a child expert being interviewed on a talk show. There was a male host and a female host and an audience, and here's their guest. And this is what he said. He's saying how you should never spank a child. And the female host, who has like a 2-year-old, she says, well, Al, you know, if they're picking up a sharp knife or something, I'll go, no, no. And the child expert goes, and it's important to know that that's wrong. Then he gets a question from the audience. And a lady says, my problem is that I'm always yelling and screaming at my kids. And he laughed. He said, oh, don't worry about that. I've got a 2-year-old, a 4-year-old. I yell and scream at mine too. Put 2 and 2 together. If your child's about to touch something dangerous or that they shouldn't touch, that they could hurt or hurt somebody else or whatever, and you think you can't do this, can you see how you could easily end up yelling and screaming? Which is the abuse? This is not abuse. What child wants to grow up in a house where they're being yelled at and screamed at? That's abusive. And here's a test. Oh, and first let's do this. What about these statements? We get frustrated. Why won't he obey? What's wrong with you? I don't know why you won't do right. Do you see how damaging that is? Here's a little six-year-old guy, and he hears mom or dad talking to him like that. What has he just heard? I'm defective, and the adults don't know what's wrong. How destructive is that? I mean, when you're six, your parents, you might not like their rules, but they're the ones that know how to drive, know how to make lasagna. You know, you don't know how to do that stuff. And they're throwing up their hands. There's something wrong with you, and we don't know what it is. That's terrible. And then there's this. Sometimes they've done something and it makes us angry. And the fact that we're angry doesn't mean that we get to take it out on them just because there's a verse in the Bible about discipline. So for this illustration, we're going to say you got a vase. And it belonged to somebody in your family generations back. And you've had it appraised, and it's worth $7,000. And for this illustration, we're going to say that you have not, up to now, had a rule about throwing a ball in the house. By the way, have what rules you want in your house. 5 rules that are followed is better than 150 rules that are not followed, okay? We had a room in our house where we let ball playing go on. We'd play football in there sometimes. But for this scenario, we're going to say there's not already a rule. But Jaden comes in, and he's got a ball, and he walks in the house, and he starts throwing it off the wall and catching it. Mom sees him, and Mom says, "Jaden, don't throw the ball in the house." Jaden looks right at her and throws the ball. What happens next? It bounces off the wall and he catches it. A lot of moms would now say what? "Jaden, I asked you not to throw the ball." "Jaden, don't make me tell you again." "Jaden, I'm going to count to 10. You know, and then she either gives up or he leaves or something. But what if instead, "Jaden, don't throw the ball in the house." He looks at her. It hits the corner of the mantle, goes over there, hits the $7,000 vase, and it shatters into 100 pieces. Now what does Mom do? Does she go, "Jaden, I asked you not to"? Oh, no. No, no. Now he's in trouble. And now he gets it. And now she wears him out. Why? Don't say it was for his sake if you weren't going to punish him when it didn't break it. He didn't try to break it, but he did deliberately disobey you, and that's what you should have taken seriously. So we'll get this slide up here, and then we need to stop. So scenario A, nothing broken, no big deal. Scenario B, and it's shattered. Is that no big deal? No, no, no. Now he's in big trouble. It's very serious. Why? Because her $7,000 vase got broken. You know what should have been? Back in scenario A, when he heard her and he willfully disobeyed, that's when he should have got punished. That should have been taken very serious. Because there was something in that room that was broken that's more important than that vase. When she told him to do something and he looked at her and defied her, there's something broken right there. And his soul is worth infinitely more than $7,000. So let's make sure that we are disciplining for the right reason. Calm, consistent, and in control, and right out of the right motive. Thank you for your attention. We'll take a break.